This is episode 345. Is chocolate good for you? Is Easter chocolate better for you than regular chocolate? Should you be eating dark chocolate? Or should you just throw it all away? In this episode, we'll be talking about the benefits, and there are actually many benefits to eating chocolate. But stay until the end, as there is an important part of this episode that you cannot miss before you leave, so that you also know the dangers of eating too much chocolate too often. Whether it's Easter, whether it's Valentine's Day, or your birthday, or just any given Sunday, right now is the best time for you to learn this information. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome back to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast at a particularly chocolatey time of year, although it's likely that you're going to be listening to this at another time of year. Maybe you've come back to the episode, maybe it's Easter again, maybe it's Christmas, maybe it's Valentine's Day, maybe it's any time that you might eat lots of chocolate and you want to know the good information about chocolate and also some of the challenges. And some of the challenges are the reason that in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And obviously, chocolate is a factor in almost everyone's desire to get control of their body weight, their emotional eating, their sugar addiction. You know, some people also have alcohol in there. That's a bit of a challenge. Some people have pastries in there. That's a bit of a challenge. But I haven't really met many people, and there's some, but so many people have chocolate that are a part of that challenge. It's probably the most common difficulty that people have in regards to breaking up with problematic foods in their diet, which is letting go of chocolate or reducing their consumption. And many people just can't. They try for a little while and then they're back. They try for a while and then they're back. And so, like all transformation, whether it be letting go of alcohol, whether it be letting go of sugar or chocolate, you know, it takes a bit of a personal development and an identity shift whilst also putting in place activities that, you know, are really helpful and make you feel good, because just depriving yourself becomes really, really difficult. Anyway, I want to talk to you about the benefits about chocolate, because there are actually a fair few, and a fair few that you're going to want to hear about. And so, first, before we dive in too deep, I actually did an episode a very long time ago. It was one of the first episodes that I ever did, episode 21. So I want to encourage you after this episode, and the link will be in the show notes below, specifically to episode 21, which is called Is Chocolate Good For You? And the reason that I want to point you to there as well as this episode today is because in there I talk about the history of chocolate and how the Aztecs were involved and how Mexico was invaded and how it got back to Europe. And now Europe is known as the, you know, the chocolate mecca of the world, particularly Switzerland, Austria, those kind of places. And so in episode 21, I talk a little bit about the history, which is really, really interesting. But I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to go sort of deep on a couple of specific aspects of chocolate. So there are 6 billion pounds of chocolate consumed in the US per year, which is interesting because Australia actually consumes more chocolate per capita. And per capita means basically per person. So now, as I just said, you know, European countries are sort of known for chocolate more so, Switzerland, Austria, Germany, that kind of stuff. And they do consume more of it. But interestingly, Australia consumes more. Specifically, we consume 4.9 kilograms per person. And the USA is actually at 4.4 kilograms per person, which is about 10 pounds. And Australia is about closer to 11 pounds per person per year. Okay, so that's a lot of chocolate. However, Switzerland is number one, which consumes 8.8 kilograms of chocolate per person per year. That's 19.6 pounds. It's almost 20 pounds, right? And Austria is second at 8.1 kilograms, so about 19 pounds. That's wild. Then it begs the question, of course, well, why is Australia and the US much more obese than the likes of Switzerland, Austria, and Germany? And, you know, we'll talk about that later in this podcast. Just because Australia and the US consume less, and the same with England, consume less than some of these European countries, doesn't mean that we're doing things correctly or doing things in a healthy way. I first want to talk about the benefits before we get into some of the dark truths about the chocolate industry. So let's talk about the benefits. So first and foremost, Theobroma cacao is a small evergreen tree. And this is the tree that we are basically collecting the beans and seeds from, and they're used to make chocolate, which we all so famously know. And they originate from Central America, or rather North America, and that's all explained on episode 21. Now, what's in these beans that come from this tree? So polyphenols and flavonoids are both really, really great things that we want to be consuming. And back in ancient times, cacao and cacao ceremonies and raw, aka chocolate, is actually regarded as one of the most powerful healing remedies or strategies that you can use to heal almost anything. And the polyphenols and the flavonoids in that are a major reason as to why that's the case. Now, what are polyphenols and flavonoids? So they're compounds and chemicals within food, so naturally occurring compounds, that are antioxidant and anti-inflammatory and in some cases anti-cancer compounds, which is fantastic. This is why eating different colored foods are really fantastic, because you get lots of different polyphenols and flavonoids, and they give color to different vegetables and fruits and whatnot, and they're really powerful to consume. And interestingly, also when we consume chocolate, we've got tryptophan is brought into the diet from the chocolate, which then triggers serotonin. And serotonin is part of our happy hormone cascade, right? And the cocktail of hormones that we feel when we are feeling happy. As a result, it also reduces anxiety. And interestingly, the effect of tryptophan and the release of serotonin is drawn out over a longer period of time and more slowly, so that the benefits last longer and in a more stable fashion when we combine dark chocolate with almonds. And there's been a number of studies that I've looked at in regards to tryptophan, serotonin, reduced anxiety, and then dark chocolate with almonds. So it's very interesting that the almonds, you know, delay or slightly mediate that release of serotonin and therefore the reduction of anxiety. Chocolate also comes with a tiny amount of caffeine and also something called theobromine, which is obviously a derivative of the plant's name when we talk about theobroma cacao, right? But I want to talk to you about, first and foremost, the caffeine in chocolate. So caffeine works by blocking the binding of adenosine to the adenosine receptor. And when the adenosine binds to these receptors, in the absence of caffeine, that's when we get really tired. That's when your brain starts to slow down. It's difficult. You've got difficulty focusing. You're sort of feeling a bit tired, a bit exhausted, a bit sleepy. And that's with adenosine binding to the adenosine receptor. However, caffeine comes in when you drink coffee or you consume chocolate or any kind of drink that has caffeine in it. And the caffeine binds to that adenosine receptor, and then it prevents that tiredness from happening. The catch is that chocolate only has trace amounts of this, and it's not even close to the 5 coffees a day that you have consumed, but there is a little bit of caffeine in chocolate. Now, the other chemical, which is the predominant stimulant in chocolate, is the theobromine, okay? So the theobromine is a stimulant. It blocks the same receptor that we just talked about with the adenosine, and it has a much slower release and longer sustain. So it does what caffeine does, but over a longer period of time and a much more sustained response over time. So there's a more stable benefit to that type of stimulant or delayed connection between adenosine and the adenosine receptor. And by delayed connection, what I mean is that the longer we delay that, the less tired we're going to be for longer. However, it does mean on the other side of that, there will be a sleepy crash when the theobromine or the caffeine wears off, which is typically the feeling that you feel when you wear out or run out of the caffeine or the theobromine in your system and you slowly start to fall into a pit of 3 p.m. snoozes and sleepiness, right? And so, interestingly, theobromine as well is also the specific compound that makes chocolate toxic to dogs. So that's why dogs should be steered away from chocolate and can get very sick and can die from consuming chocolate. Now, there's another compound in there too, which is phenylethylamine, or it's known as PEA, which is similar in structure to some fun times. No, what I really mean is that it's similar in structure to amphetamines. It's also similar in structure to another really fun time, methamphetamines. Insert sarcasm, everybody. Chill out. I'm not on meth. And so phenylethylamine is a stimulant that's found in chocolate. It's a stimulant because PEA binds to the same receptors that methamphetamine binds to, which triggers a release of dopamine and norepinephrine in the body. It's bringing up those feel-good feels, you know, obviously not to the level of doing meth in an alley, but the point is that it's having that same effect and it's happening in the same location in the body. So it stimulates the feel-good stuff, just not to the same level as methamphetamines because, well, we don't want to go there. Interestingly though, if you're a woman or you have women in your life, it is actually this PEA molecule, this phenylethylamine, which the body is craving when women crave chocolate during their menstrual cycle or their period, because it boosts dopamine. And it can actually be more difficult to have dopamine experiences during or after ovulation and much closer to bleed week or during the first few days of bleed week, because there's a downregulation of dopamine neurons, right? So this is why you can feel a bit depressed and a bit sad and like, it, you know, nothing's moving your mood in a positive direction, because there's actually a downregulation of those neurons. And so going towards chocolate can stimulate those dopamine pathways, and the PEA is an active part of stimulating those dopamine pathways and getting them going. And the reason that binges and sort of overeating is more likely to happen with sugar and chocolate, particularly, is that in this situation, you're overcoming an already deficient system in dopamine because it's that time of the month. And because you feel sad, you want to move towards dopamine more rapidly and more quickly and with more urgency than you would in other, you know, days or parts of the cycle. So you end up overeating because you, one, want to pick yourself up out of this hole or this rut or this sadness, but also then you're just back to baseline. You then want to go after the dopamine in abundant amounts, right? Plus the thing that you're putting in your body, if it's sugar, right, is addictive. So it's interesting that that's also a factor in eating chocolate. So it's also known in the laboratory setting as the love drug, an aphrodisiac, okay? And that might explain the commercialization of chocolate as an expression of love or as a gift to loved ones or people we care about or romantic or sexual partners. And Valentine's Day, you know, chocolate is a massive part of that. Now, interesting that we've been talking about chocolate so far in the context of it being a stimulant and it getting you going with theobromine, with phenylethylamine, and with caffeine. You know, that's all stuff that's like, go, 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 feel good, go towards the dopamine, energy, productivity, okay? But it's not solely a stimulant because it also has some cannabinoids, similar to the compounds found in marijuana. Now, the most important one being anandamide. That's a difficult compound to say, anandamide. And anandamide binds to the same receptors that THC binds to when you smoke or eat weed. So it contributes to that feeling of being blissed out. Like, have you ever had some chocolate and just been like, oh my God, it's so good. And it's that kind of stoned effect, like feeling like you've been stoned. Maybe you've never been stoned in your life. And if you're in this situation with anandamide and a good bar of chocolate, then maybe you have been a little stoned. But you can't actually get high by eating chocolate because we have an enzyme in the body that breaks down anandamide down into two smaller molecules, right? And so it has a very brief blissed out effect, but you can't actually get high from this particular molecule because it's not THC. It just binds to the same place that THC binds to in the body. Now, as a result of these things and many of the other good things about chocolate, there's lots of research that shows positive effects, right? It shows that your blood pressure goes down, and that's likely due to an increase in the nitric oxide supply. It's also got magnesium, iron, potassium, zinc all in there. So these are electrolytes that help balance out different things in the body that are good for your cell-to-cell transduction and communication, also good for supplying oxygen to the body, also good for managing your immune system, and also the iron, like a lot of white people and particularly women in the world are deficient in iron. Iron is actually the number one nutritional deficiency in the world. However, trust me, you're better getting it from a steak than you are from chocolate, but it's in there. It's in there. We can also see in the studies that it increases HDL, which is the quote unquote good cholesterol, and it decreases LDL, which is the quote unquote bad cholesterol. Now, I did an episode on good and bad cholesterol some time ago. And so you might already know that I'm not a big fan of the terms good and bad cholesterol because we need both of them and they're both as important as one another. It's just the numbers or the volume of them. And so if you're interested in listening to that episode, it was one of my biggest because I think a lot of, you know, so many people are on statin drugs that, people sort of lost their mind with that episode. But episode 136, is my cholesterol really a problem? So if you know anyone on a statin or you've got cholesterol problems, please listen to that episode 136. But yes, so chocolate has that kind of effect. It also helps decrease the risk of heart disease and it improves endothelial function. It's also really good for stress because it reduces cortisol and adrenaline, and most of us are absolutely wired and running on stress and running around like headless chooks, basically trying to get our life done and keep up with the Joneses and all that kind of stuff. but also can contribute to decreasing the risk of certain types of cancers because of the nutrients that appear in it, the flavonoids, the polyphenols, the electrolytes. It also decreases insulin resistance. So it actually improves insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome. And there was actually a study that was done, and it was a short-term study, but it was over 14 days. And this is exciting that it showed such a positive impact so soon. And they had one group, which was that ate white chocolate, and one group that ate dark chocolate. And there was no change for the white chocolate people, but there was the people that ate dark chocolate were significantly improved in their insulin sensitivity, which was measured by looking at their blood sugar, their insulin, and their A1C. As we've already talked about, it can elevate your mood, and that's likely due to the tryptophan and the impact on serotonin and also the stimulation of dopamine pathways. And it can improve your skin with, again, the micronutrients that are in it and improve your circulation. And again, that circulation is probably a factor as a result of the improved levels of nitric oxide. So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. So the thing is, everything I've been talking about so far is fundamentally about cacao, right? Cacao, the ingredient, the chocolate, which is dark chocolate, right? Which is the ingredient that we want to see most in our chocolate bars, okay? White chocolate is not chocolate at all. There's almost no chocolate or cacao in white chocolate. It's actually just a candy full of sugar that looks like chocolate. It's masquerading with the marketing and the advertising. It's not chocolate whatsoever. But milk chocolate is most likely the chocolate that you're eating in your life. And milk chocolate is mostly not chocolate as well. On average, milk chocolate is only 12% chocolate, okay? Or cacao mass by weight. And the other 88% of the weight is made up with sugar being at about 48 to 50%, milk solids being somewhere between 18 and 24%, butter being about 19%, and then lecithin and flavoring and other moderators and natural flavors and enhancers being about 0.4 to 1% of the ingredients. Whereas when we're talking about some of the benefits that I've talked about above, we're talking about dark chocolate. So anything above 60 to 70%. And if we're getting into the category of 70 and above, when it comes to the percentage of cacao that's actually in the chocolate, the good news is that it has 8 times the caffeine and 7 times the theobromine. Okay, so that's where some of the benefits are coming from when it comes to chocolate. However, people love good news about their bad habits. So you might be listening to this episode thinking, fantastic, Maddie. I mean, really, chocolate's a bean from a tree. It's basically healthy for me. However, let's talk about why that's a bad idea. Now, flavonoids are a good thing. However, when we add additives, we reduce the number of flavonoids that the body's able to absorb. And some of the things that we can add to chocolate actually inhibits the functioning of and the absorption of some of the healthy and helpful molecules that we might have actually normally extracted from the cacao bean or seed, you know, the actual cacao plant that we should be eating or drinking. And the truth is that it's going to take many weeks or months to be able to see the benefits of eating chocolate. You need to eat it every day, just like you would take a supplement. And the reality is the studies that we've been talking about and the benefits that came from studies were people eating it for a period of time that was sustained, was daily, was repetitive. And ideally, I would recommend that to nobody. unless you're eating straight up 90% or, you know, a cacao beverage that's like 100% cacao. It's very different to the supermarket chocolate that you're probably getting your hands on. The other thing is some people have issues with oxalates. Chocolate has plenty of oxalates in it. You might know oxalates from the period of time where the internet lost its shit over eating spinach and green vegetables because they contain high amounts of oxalates, and everyone was saying oxalates are toxic and they're poisonous and you should stay away from green vegetables and they're trying to kill you. And that's going to be relevant to some people, of course. Oxalates are not a good thing for some people. Oxalate sensitivity, oxalate intolerance, absolutely a thing. But for most people, oxalates aren't a bad thing. It's just a normal part of eating a omnivorous diet, which has meat and steak and all sorts of delicious animal protein, and of course, vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds. So let's look at an option that comes from the supermarket. Okay, I want to talk to you about a mainstream supermarket here in Australia, and it's going to be pretty similar in the US. An Easter bunny, an Easter rabbit that is made of chocolate here in front of me, and I've got the ingredient list. Now, the ingredient list isn't too crazy, to be totally honest. We've got full cream milk, sugar, cacao butter, cacao mass, milk solids, emulsifiers, soy lecithin, flavors, 4476. It's not huge, but interesting that cacao was not the first ingredient, okay? It was not the number one ingredient in this, okay? But the most concerning thing, and most of the chocolate that you consume or that you're giving as gifts at Easter time or Valentine's Day, these are the problems that I'm about to talk to you about. One, in this, there's soy. So soy is not great, but that's a minor problem. But this has 54.8 grams of sugar. 54.8 grams of added sugar per 100 grams. That's not just in the whole thing. So this bunny, this rabbit, this chocolate rabbit is 150 grams and it's got 54.8 grams of sugar. That's crazy. And that's in one. And I can guarantee everybody is going to eat so much more than this on Easter and in the days afterwards. And probably in your normal life, you would eat more than this. Okay. If we do the calculation, so that's 54 grams per 100 grams. And this particular thing has 150 grams. So in this one rabbit, there's 82.2 grams of sugar. That is devastatingly high. Okay. And it recommends here that the serving size is 25 grams of this rabbit, of this chocolate bunny. And as a result, there's 13.7 grams of sugar in that, which is still way too much. And nobody's going to have a serving size of 25 grams. Like, are you joking? Just to show you how cooked this amount of sugar is in a single chocolate bunny rabbit at Easter time, I'm going to read you the World Health Organization recommendation. Here we go. The World Health Organization recommends that free sugars make up no more than 10% of daily kilojoule intake to prevent unhealthy weight gain and dental caries. Free sugars are monosaccharides such as glucose, fructose, and disaccharides, such as sucrose or table sugar, added to foods and drinks, and sugars naturally present in honey, syrups, fruit juices, and fruit juice concentrates. For an adult of a healthy body mass index, or BMI, this amount works out to be about 12 teaspoons or 50 grams of free sugar per day. So this single 150 gram chocolate rabbit has 82 grams in it, which is higher than what the World Health Organization recommends. And just as a disclaimer, I believe that that recommendation of 50 grams per day, not in a single eating session, but per day, of the World Health Organization recommendations, I believe that is way too high. I truly do. That's way too much added sugar. And yet we've got single pieces of chocolate, single gifts that we're going to give to our kids and to our loved ones that have got 82, and they're going to probably eat multiple of these in a single sitting. This is why this amount of sugar is fucked. And the other problem with this is that there's a huge lack of fiber that comes with this sugar. Sugar is a psychoactive and an addictive substance. It causes fat gain. It causes blood sugar dysregulation and insulin problems. It causes diabetes. Okay. It increases your risk of hypertension and cardiovascular disease. It increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease, which they now dub type 3 diabetes because of its relationship to food and sugar. It increases your risk of cancers. This volume of sugar in a single piece of food that probably your kids and maybe yourself eat all the time, just not in rabbit bunny form or bunny rabbit form, it's an extremely high amount. And over the course of our lives, the food industry has been slowly conditioning our palates to need more and more and more sugar, because the more sugar, the more addictive the product. The more challenges emotionally, physically, you will have with regulating your relationship with that food, which is super beneficial to sugar companies. They should be treated like drug companies, because it is a drug. It messes with people's lives, right? Now, all of the devastating things that happen in milk chocolate and white chocolate. If we're talking 0 to 70%, technically that's not really a chocolate category for me. It's a sugar product that's flavored like chocolate. If you're eating chocolate or gifting chocolate, then it should be 70% to 100% dark chocolate. It's going to take time for you to train your palate to move up the ranks, and that's okay. But you want to get to a place where you basically don't want to overeat it. Because when you get higher and higher, the cacao bean is actually really bitter, which, if you find it really bitter, tells me something about your immune system, okay? But irrelevant of what it tells any of your practitioners about the way that you experience the flavor is that you are actually getting health benefits from eating chocolate, and you're eating a food that is far closer to what exists in nature. We'll give you a little bit of that chocolate experience, but you won't overeat it. You won't binge it. The other thing that I think is really important is, not only does it put you at risk of being a sugar addict and tying your emotions to food, is that we train our children that gifts and events need certain foods, which once upon a time, 50 or 100 years ago, I would have said is totally fine. It's beautiful that, you know, different events come with different treats and specialities. But now, in this world of excessive abundance, right, we're treating our children like little heroin addicts and saying, oh, this event comes with this type of sugar. This event comes with this type of sugar. This event comes with this type of chocolate. This event comes with this type of chocolate. Christmas chocolates and Easter chocolates and birthday chocolates. And, you know, it's a long weekend chocolates. And that would be fine if we're having dark chocolate conversations, but we're not. We're training our kids to associate events with high levels of sugar, high levels of a psychoactive substance that is addictive, that will lead to them having an emotional regulation issue later in life if they don't already. Developing learning difficulties, developing problems concentrating, developing the inability to manage oneself around food, which then leads to obesity, diabetes, all of the things we talked about before. So is chocolate a good thing or a bad thing? Well, if we're talking about chocolate that you find in the supermarket, then mostly it's a bad thing. All of the health benefits I talked about are not pertaining to the chocolate you'll buy in the supermarket, okay? It's okay to, you know, go out once in a while and treat yourself and have a good time and give yourself permission. I'm not demonizing anybody that does that. I'll be doing that at Easter or my birthday or Valentine's Day or the events. But unless you have the skills to manage your relationship with food beyond those particular events, then you're just setting yourself up for not just a couple of days of challenges, but a week, a month, a year, a decade, a lifetime of being unable to regulate your emotions and food. And you might be addicted. You might physically become addicted. Food addiction is a real thing. Sugar addiction is a real thing, right? And so I've got a little strategy for you here after a particular event in your life, like Easter, where chocolate comes into your world at large abundance. And this is something that I will also do if I'm in this situation as well, which is that you want to draw a line in the sand. You want to enjoy what you want to enjoy and eat what you want to eat, and that's okay. But you want to pick a day in the week after Easter or after said event. And on that day, you will either give the chocolate away or you will put it in the bin. You'll throw it away. And what you need to be careful of, that deadline or that line in the sand doesn't lead to you overeating or binge eating in the multiple days before. We want to be able to manage our relationship with this psychoactive, highly addictive substance, right? Which is, you know, a bit of an oxymoron, saying we should be able to regulate our relationship. And then in the next sentence, me saying psychoactive and addictive, right? I understand the catch 22 there, right? But you want to pick a day. So say the event is on Sunday, everybody gets chocolate, you get chocolate. And then on Wednesday, you decide this is the day that I'm going to give it away. I'm going to put a post on Facebook. I'm going to message other people in my friend network or family network or give it to the homeless or whatever it might be. I'm going to give it away. Okay. Or another thing is physically crush it up, like break it up into tiny pieces and put it in the bin so it's not salvageable, because you would be surprised the amount of people that actually go back to the bin to retrieve the food that they once threw out. And another tactic that some people even do is they go one step further than crushing it all up into tiny pieces. They then cover it in detergent. Yep, that's right. Washing detergent. They cover it and drown it in that, because then it's totally unsalvageable and now it's purely toxic, right? So this is what I want to encourage you to do. So is chocolate a good thing? Chocolate in its mainstream supermarket form? No. The benefits we've talked about here are from 70% above. And in my belief, 70 to 100, that's the only category we should be calling chocolate. Anything under 70% should be called candy or lollies that are chocolate flavored, because they don't contain enough chocolate, in my opinion, to be of any health benefit. Okay? And this gets into the conversation around legislation, around marketing and advertising and labeling. You know, these days you can advertise a protein bar as having protein in it, and it's only got 3% of the weight of the actual bar is protein. And so this is a problem in the food world, which is why we have to educate ourselves on podcasts like this so we know what we're looking for. Educate your kids, educate your partner, start changing your palate so that you know that chocolate is anything above 70%. It will take a little bit of time to build up, and I want to encourage you to build up. And there's options in the supermarket that will allow you to go from where you are now at milk chocolate, which is on average 12% chocolate, and then you go to 20, then go to 30, then go to 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. And you'll find a sweet spot. Maybe it's 78. 78% is my sweet spot. That's where I like to find the nice balance. And the good thing for that balance for me is that I totally have a susceptibility to emotionally eat and binge eat, because that's my, you know, that's me. But when I get to 78, I don't ever feel a desire to binge eat that level of bitter cacao. That's where I know my sweet spot is, because I'm eating it for the nutritional drive and a little bit of pleasure, but not totally pleasure in the absence of nutrition. So that's how I want you to think about it too. Build up over time your palate, but if you've got an abundance of milk chocolate or white chocolate at home, pick a day, draw a line in the sand, give it away, put it in the bin, get back to your normal life. Because having this stuff around, it's highly unlikely, if you're an emotional eater or if you're a binge eater or you've got any type of eating disorder, it's highly unlikely that today is the time that you'll finally be able to change your relationship with this food. Accept that it's challenging and do something about it. So, lots of good things about cacao, plenty of challenging things, most of which are added sugar. And for many people as well, dairy. The dairy and the milk solids that are added in there too. And then we've got some soy issues for some people. And we've also got the added flavors and whatnot that contribute to all sorts of different problems. And we could probably do an episode on each individual flavor enhancer and the particular types of texture molecules that they add in so that it feels a certain way on your tongue. But for now, I wanted to cover some of the benefits and some of the consequences and just get the message out there loud and clear. 70% and above is real chocolate. And that's the area that you should be aiming to get to for enjoying your chocolate. It'll taste gross in the beginning, but you'll love it really soon. So I hope you have or have had a fantastic Easter and time with your family, or birthday or Valentine's Day or Christmas or New Year's, wherever chocolate is showing up in your world. And I hope this episode has taught you something. Or if you need to send this to your partner to say, hey, maybe we should take some of Maddie's thoughts on board in regards to maybe not conditioning our children to think about all of these events and sugar, then maybe this episode's a good one to share with them. Anyway, thanks for hanging out. I'll catch you on the next episode. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.